Welcome back in. Final hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Little Guys Movers. Here's your chance to be your own boss. Join their team of 30-plus years of profits and good times. Visit littleguysfranchise.com. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you, and we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, what's going on? How are we doing?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you doing this morning?
Great. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. So, Charles, what do you make of this Tom Brady Dolphins story that got circulated out there by Mike Florio a couple of weeks ago about maybe potentially trying to be an owner slash player of the Dolphins? What do you make of that story and kind of how that all has unfolded here in the aftermath since then?
I doubt that the 10th episode of Man in the Arena is going to address this. I think they're going to steer very clear of it. I think there's something to it. I really do. It was funny because late in March, we were on our podcast and I was kind of trying to lay out the timeline. And, you know, I said, look, the question here is like, what happened? Like, the guy was retired 5+ weeks. And we've not really ever gotten any realistic answer that makes any sense to anyone with a brain over why he would say, you know, that he didn't, and again, he didn't use the word retirement. You know, he just didn't feel, I'm paraphrasing here, like he wanted to commit to football anymore or whatever. And then all of a sudden, you know, 5+ weeks later, he's changed his mind and it's all very vague and opaque and no one's quite sure what happened in that 5-week period. Then Bruce Arians obviously steps down as head coach. But look, some people call it, you know, dot connecting and that it's this conspiracy with the Dolphins and everything. And, you know, I don't know. I think if you just look at the facts of the fact that Brian Flores comes out with this lawsuit and says, hey, the owner tried to get me to tamper with a quarterback. That's later reported to be Tom Brady. There's Michigan ties there. You know, Tom Brady and Giselle, you know, have a $17 million home that they purchased that's 20 minutes from Hard Rock Stadium and 30 minutes from the Davie practice facility of the Miami Dolphins. Whenever Tom was asked about his future in football, he was always very vague about it. I just think there's a lot. I think there's a lot there. And, you know, I posed the question of, like, if this was all going down, all these reports, and by the way, it's not just Mike Florio now. Like, Mike was out there in front, but also you had Ben Volen, obviously, the Boston Globe. You had the South Florida Sun Sentinel came in the wake and said, hey, yeah, this was going on. That's a lot of different individuals reporting the same thing. And I'm sure Tom will deny it, but when you kind of look at everything, the totality of it, it all makes a lot of sense. And the NFL is not going to investigate tampering here because if it did, first off, you would have to investigate both tampering charges. And if, say, you were able to prove that Stephen Ross tried to get Brian Flores to meet with Tom Brady on his yacht in 2019, well, then you just proved part of the Brian Flores lawsuit. Okay, that's a problem for the NFL because they're named in the lawsuit. Say you move on to the second, you know, the second whole Dolphins story, that's another tampering charge. Well, then if you prove that, it means that Stephen Ross was trying to hire Sean Payton or had already chosen, like, to go after Sean Payton, circumventing the Rooney Rule, which is why, part of why, the Flores lawsuit exists in the first place. So basically you have the NFL saying, yeah, we're going to go ahead and investigate ourselves. we've got a great track record of that right now. It's just not going to happen. And by the way, people can't ignore the Sean Payton component of this. Who's his agent? Don Yee. Who's Don Yee's most famous client? Tom Brady. There's a lot of connectivity in all this stuff that's been going on. And, you know, I expect at some point, and maybe it will be in Man in the Arena or whatever, I expect at some point there's going to be a pretty hard denial of any of this stuff having happened. And I also expect further on down the line, it's going to be just like, you know, Seth Wickersham's book, It's Better to Be Feared. We're going to find out, oh, wait, actually, there was some stuff going on, but, you know, we just couldn't talk about it then.
Speaking of connectivity, Charles, I'm going to read part of a tweet of yours from a week ago on the Commanders and Daniel Snyder and this latest mess. If the NFL doesn't swing a wrecking ball at the Commanders, it's going to scream of impropriety across the league's financials. Maybe it's not one team cooking the books. Maybe it's a barbecue and everyone is holding a plate. That's a hell of a tweet, by the way. What have we stumbled on here?
Congressional oversight. I mean, you know, it was funny because when this all started, everyone's like, well, you know, what can Congress do? Who cares? Nothing is going to come of this, blah, blah, blah. Well, the problem is once you start to have testimony, once people roll in and start speaking before a Congressional Oversight Committee, you don't know what else you're going to get to. And to have a 24-year employee of Washington's franchise, someone who rose to the VP level of the executive layer in that organization, come out and say, yeah, you know, we had two sets of books. I've got data in this. I've got, you know, spreadsheets, you know, start turning over materials and then explain that, hey, this revenue that basically we're stealing from our season ticket holders. That's what this employee was saying. We're stealing revenue from season ticket holders that then should have gone into the shared revenue pot. But instead, we were diverting it into things like, oh, there's a college football game, there's a country music concert. That's where this revenue was coming from. Upwards of like $5 million over time. I mean, it's in some ways, it's kind of a genius plot, but it's also unbelievably ridiculous that you would steal from your NFL partners, which is what's being alleged here, to do what? Grift $5 million over, I mean, for an NFL owner, for a franchise, it makes little sense why you would do that, but it was interesting. I reached out to some other NFL executives who are kind of following along with this thing, and a general manager said something really interesting to me. He said, one of the biggest revelations in my job was understanding how people who are in the executive portion of our franchise and deal with ticket revenue, how much pressure they're under to produce as much ticket revenue on the bottom line as possible. And he said, when I read it, completely seemed possible to me that this could be going on, knowing the kind of pressure that you know, executives are when it comes to that portion of the money that a team keeps. And it also made me think, like, wait a minute, like, is this potentially happening elsewhere? Like, is this, clearly this pressure exists in guys inside this guy's franchise. Clearly maybe there was some pressure inside Washington's franchise. And if the NFL doesn't want to continue to look into something like this or really do an aggressive investigation, that's because the NFL is sitting there with, you know, 31 other ownership groups, you know, even the Packers sitting there going, well, who knows what else is under the hood here. And maybe, feasibly, it's possible some NFL owners don't know what exactly is being done to keep the bottom line as fat as possible when it comes to ticket revenue. But it's, the bottom line is messy, right? It's just messy. Washington's in a mess. The mess gets worse. And the further they go, the worse this seems to get. And I even mentioned, like, hey, there was like a DEA raid of their facility tied to, you know, somebody was on their, you know, medical training staff. And we don't even talk about this at that point. We don't even know what happened with that. And there were players interviewed for that.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Charles, what do you make of the Baker Mayfield situation and specifically the comments that he made recently about feeling disrespected and I'd like to show up to people's work and boo them, all these different things? What do you make of kind of the Baker Mayfield situation and how he's handling it to this point?
I wish all my money was guaranteed too.
Yes.
Please show up at my home office and boo me while I collect my millions of dollars in guaranteed money. He's not helping himself, okay? And I think the Browns had a chance to talk to somebody there, and they're not going to go tit for tat with him because they're like, what's the point now? Like, it's just, they're like, why? Like, we're not going to engage in this. Definitely the Browns feel like he's lying, you know? Like, he knew exactly what was going on. The Browns met with his reps at the combine, and from what I was told, what was shared with me was they were very explicit, like, hey, we're rolling with Baker. However, there is a caveat to this. If we get a shot at an elite level quarterback, we are going to pursue that. We're going to look into it and see if there's potential, you know, to go in that direction. Well, Baker's saying, no, they're doing something now that, you know, I was told the opposite. And if that's true, you know, someone in this process is lying, and it would make very little sense for Baker's representatives to be told that and not share that with Baker. And it tracks with kind of what was going on as the season closed, that, hey, if the Browns have a chance to, you know, whether it's Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson or Deshaun Watson or whoever, you know, they would definitely tip in to those sweepstakes. So it's not, it seems to be a revelation to only Baker. He's not helping himself right now. You know, there are very few suitors out there that are chasing him. So for him to once again do another kind of social media, I don't want to say blitz, but I mean to step out on social media, step out with media and air things out before a trade's even buttoned up, it just doesn't make a lot of sense. And there are definitely NFL teams that are sitting there going, he's got a track record of this. He's continuing to do this. He couldn't even wait for a trade to be completed. Like, if he had waited, you know, guys, I mean, I'm asking you guys, we'd understand that, right? Like, let's say he gets traded to the Panthers and he says, okay, let's button up the Cleveland experience. Wasn't great. I was pissed. They did something I didn't, you know, I was told the opposite, blah, blah, blah. But now let's move forward with this new franchise. Awesome. We kind of understand that, right?
Why
do you do it in the middle, right? Like, why do it in the middle?
It's a very fair question. Speaking of social media, I loved your Barker Mayfield tweet. I got it. So, you know, don't feel bad that a lot of people didn't. Another excellent Charles Robinson tweet. Okay, let's stay with social media. So I want to get your assessment of how much should be made of this here in Nashville. One, Ryan Tannehill, this is not a social media thing, not showing up for the first day of OTAs. Two, A.J. Brown, of course, and he's not alone here with some of these receivers looking for deals, taking the word Tennessee out of his Twitter bio. Your thoughts?
This is so funny, this social media scrubbing the new passive aggressive, taking the logos out. And then, like, it's funny, too, because guys always deny it later. You know, oh, well, yeah. I think Kyler Murray was talking about Arizona, and he made it sound like it was like an age demographic thing. Like, all you guys don't understand. Like, young people, we do this all the time.
You boomers don't get it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, okay, dude, apparently this is just something people do. But, you know, Tannehill, first and foremost, yeah, I'll be honest with you, I don't have the inside track on that. But I was, like, when I heard it, I was like, what? Like, this is not one that I would have, you know, would have expected. I'm curious. I'm probably along with you guys to kind of see, you know, what this is all about. And it's unusual for any quarterback, unless there's, you know, some kind of contract issue involved, for any quarterback not to show up. Like, for a quarterback not to show up to voluntary stuff, to most franchises, is a big deal, because it's, you know, look, it's a leadership thing. Unless it's like a veteran guy who's already talked to the franchise that, hey, you know, off season, I'm trying to peel back a little bit. We got some young guys you want to get a look at. I'll come in at a later phase of it. Or the franchise said, hey, you know, we're okay with you sitting out the portion until we start to, you know, work on install or, you know, any of the like passing camp type stuff, anything like that. Or if you want to do work away from the facility with the receivers, you know, you see a lot of these quarterbacks will go to, you know, different areas of the country or take like a little, you know, take a week and invite the guys in, things like that. You know, maybe that's one reason for it. But more often than not, if it's not something that's already worked out ahead with the franchise, it always has something to do with money. So, you know, that's that's probably what I would keep an eye on. Ryan Tannehill, quarterbacks are almost all underpaid now because of where them. It's like the wide receivers. They're almost all underpaid now because of where things are going. And you're seeing, you know, A.J. Brown, this is kind of how this plays into this. You're seeing all these players go, okay, well, I'm not going to wait to get this addressed. Like, it needs to be addressed now, particularly given that it's not just the very top end that blew it out. Christian Kirk. You know, it was like you got all these top-end guys who blew out the salary structure of quarterbacks, but then you also have really what's like a top 40 guy, maybe, you know, top 50 guy who really blew out, you know, that part of the salary structure as well. So, you know, the AJ Brown thing to me is very serious. You know, I think if you asked me, like, hey, let's keep an eye on a couple of different receivers who could potentially get dealt going into the draft, I'd say DK Metcalf. I'd say AJ Brown is another one that I would keep an eye on, only because you have a team like the Jets that I think is going to take a wide receiver either with the 4th or 10th pick, probably that 10th pick, you know, based on who might be there. I think the Jets definitely would trade that pick for a receiver they deem to be like a number one quality player that they're ready to dole the contract out now. AJ would fit that, okay? But so would DK Metcalf, you know, and maybe a few other guys. So, yeah, I'd be concerned about AJ because you're talking about him. He's definitely going to be in that grouping of 25 million plus APY and the monster contracts that these wideouts are getting. And I don't think that the Titans are going to be alone in having to sort of deal with this going into next season. There's going to be a couple other teams where, you know, there's veteran guys going, hey, let's get it. I mean, look at the Rams. Cooper Kupp, he just signed an extension. He's got years left. That's got to be redone. I mean, he's completely underpaid considering his stature right now in the NFL.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Row, joins us every Tuesday morning at 9 o'clock. Charles, great stuff as always. Appreciate you taking time to be with us today.
All right. Thanks, guys. Take care.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You as well. Charles Robinson, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Row. We'll take your reaction to what Charles just said about A.J. Brown on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. I've got your chance to qualify to win some tickets to Talladega coming up next as well. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. It's time for Talladega Trivia. If you answer correctly, you'll qualify to win a pair of tickets to the ARCA Menard NASCAR Xfinity Series doubleheader coming up on Saturday, April 23rd, and a pair of tickets to the Geico 500 on Sunday, April 24th, and one pair to the Talladega Garage Experience and passes for that. Today's trivia question is this that you can answer on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Again, that's our text line. What driver has the most wins at Talladega? What driver has the most wins at Talladega? If you know the answer, hit up our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. The winner will be announced coming up on Friday during the 9 o'clock hour, but this is your chance to qualify for those tickets. So 615-737-1025. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio here with you on this Tuesday morning. Chris Mason, Preds TV analyst, coming up at 9:30. Joe, what did you make of Charles's comments there on the AJ Brown situation and how, if you're a Titans fan, maybe you should be a little nervous about AJ Brown moving forward?
Well, before Charles got off the phone, I wanted to thank him very much for stepping on that hornet's nest for us. Thank you for bringing the Jets back up, yes. Charles, as a viable possibility. Well, hey, I mean, again, I've never doubted, like, the Jets' interest in this.
Sure.
I just doubt the Titans' interest in this. But I guess until you get past the time when it could be possible, you keep it in play as a possibility. Also, on the Tannehill front, I hear what he's saying because typically that is what it means, right? If someone who just you would expect to be at something isn't there, that, you know, maybe. But like, if, I mean, I don't think that's what this is. If it is, it would be hilarious. And actually, then I promise you, Ryan Tannehill will be booed every time he steps on the field if he's asking for more money right now. And by the way, I want this deal redone too, okay?
And I'm not showing up until it is.
Yeah. That's not what this is. I mean, if that's what this is, then, I mean, I may boo Tannehill from here. Boo.
I think I might applaud.
Hey, that's well, what this is. That's
I think
true.
I might stand and applaud.
Actually, you're right. It's like, I'm not even mad. Like, that's like, good. Tannehill.
Good for you,
I love it,
buddy.
Man. Go get the bag, man. That's right. You know what? What about all the good passes I threw amid those three picks, huh? No one talks about that.
Beautiful spirals.
Yeah. Yep. But be apart from that, apart from just sort of the general, you know, view of like when a player does this, I mean, I think Charles brought up, I mean, this is not nothing, okay? It's not nothing. It's not a big deal. I still don't think it's a big deal, but this is the type of thing that people look at and say, I wonder why that is. You know, which you could have easily avoided by being here. So, again, that's the overarching someone who covers the NFL view of things like this. But it is kind of like, I wasn't surprised at all that Kevin Byard was there yesterday at a press conference and is in the building for every second of whatever they're going to do together, even if it really doesn't involve him all that much. And if you ask me, do you think Tannehill will be there for that or not? I would have guessed yes.
I got a text that says, what if Tannehill was sitting out for AJ Brown? LOL. Like I'm in partnership in unison with my wide receiver. We're not showing up until he's got a contract.
A show of solidarity. Yeah. Did Matt Ryan do that for Julio?
I don't think so.
I don't think he did. Yeah, that was a thought. I like it. Well, real quick on the text line, too, because we didn't get to this. JC in Goodlettsville. Did you hear Jared says he moves the needle more than anyone else in radio last week? Also says the Tannehill hate seems to be an area he may have impacted. On Nashville radio.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah, so that was I did hear that. So it was during the Nashville SC concessions gate or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Hot dog gate. And it, again, like I thought Jared made a lot of who was, and then he slipped that in and you're just like, oh, Jared, you can't resist. You just can't help yourself, can you?
Oh, man.
Oh,
I love it.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yep.
By the way, lots of correct answers on the text line. Dale Earnhardt, most wins in Talladega history with 10. So if you have been contacted, you are the winner of the qualifying for the ticket. So Dale Earnhardt, several people on the text line got this correctly. So congratulations. We have smart listeners.
And by the way, I give special credit to those who put senior in there.
That is true.
Some people just put Dale Earnhardt. I'm just saying.
That is true. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Chris Mason, Preds TV analyst. We'll get his thoughts on the Preds as they take on the Calgary Flames coming up tonight. Make sure you tune in for Nashville Sounds Baseball tonight on ESPN 94.9 as the Sounds take on the Charlotte Knights, the AAA affiliate of the Chicago White Sox at First Horizon Park. Pregame show with Jeff Hem starts at 6:20 and first pitch is at 6:35. Sounds Baseball on ESPN 94.9 presented by 312 Pizza, Farm Bureau Health Plans, and Spirited Hive. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, The Game. And it is that time of the week here on Robbie and Rex Road. Time to go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in Preds TV analyst, former Preds goaltender Chris Mason, brought to you by Coleman Tractor, Middle Tennessee's leading Kubota dealer. Preds in action tonight, taking on the Calgary Flames. C-Mace, what's going on? How are we doing?
Not too much. I'm excited about this one. Got a little help last night, which has been rare lately, both Dallas and Vegas lose. Vegas, ooh, they're in trouble. But I'm looking forward to this. This is a potential first-round matchup. So I really, after last game's debacle and then the second period, I really do not know what happened there, especially when they came out in the first period and the wheels just fell off. They looked tired, disinterested. I know they played a lot of hockey here lately, but in a game, you know, against a rival like that, I was really shocked and stunned, to be honest with you. They just looked slow, lethargic, and it was almost just like a switch, because I thought their first period was really good, and they just fell apart. But you know, this group of players has responded well, I feel, all year. I don't think we've seen a period quite like that, so that's why my radar is a little more going to be focused on that, because it was shocking, to be honest with you. But now I just want to see how this group responds, because they have responded well all year to adversity, and there's no more important time than right now, because if they don't, we've all seen the standings. It might end up you know, in a pretty scary situation, you'd be out of the playoffs here. So I'm very interested to see how the start of this game goes and how they respond to the last game against the Blues.
Yeah, no question about that. And C-Mace, to that point, I mean, it's been, I think it's fair to say, inconsistent from this group as of late in terms of what they brought to the table. Just what are you seeing from them in their game right now, particularly when it comes to sometimes those defensive breakdowns that you just talked about? It's certainly, you know, the most glaring of which happened in the last game against St. Louis.
Well, to me is, I mean, how many times have we talked about identity? You guys talked about identity, the players. It's one of the, you know, the biggest topics of the year is this team and what is the identity? Well, one of the things to me that the inconsistency that you mentioned is when they get in the neutral zone, you know, you're playing against the Blues. That's a good defensive team. And, you know, you're playing against the Edmonton Oilers and you're trying to, you know, play like them and you're trying to skate it through the neutral zone into the zone. And instead of every time they play well, they say, well, what do we have to do? We've got to get our check. Well, you're trying to rush and skate the puck into the zone every time. There is no forecheck. You can't establish it. You can't get hits. You can't use your physicality. It's tough to get chances off the rush, you know, unless you get it off transition and it's a turnover or something like that. It's not the way that they've had success. And when they do, when they chip it in early, I know a lot of guys, you don't like to do it, but they have to be committed to that because that's how they win hockey games. And what that does, when they do it early, if they start chipping it in, and you got the herd line going after, and, you know, even when Forsberg and Duchesne do that, you know, they'll go in there, they'll get on the body. Well, later in the game, you condition the defenseman and the team that they automatically back in. So then you're going to have more space to actually carry the puck in. And I feel a lot of the inconsistency lately is that, for whatever reason, early in games, they just are getting away from doing that. And then they start forcing it. And then pucks get turned over and they're giving up scoring chances left and right because they're not committing early to chipping the puck in. And I just feel there's some indecision. I don't know if there's some confidence issues with some of the guys. I think it's more just second-guessing and decision-making because they're not taking as direct of an approach. You know, they're trying to make some east-west plays, little cute plays through the neutral zone instead of just, you know what, what's our identity? We know what our identity is. We know who we are. Be true to that. Don't get away from that just because you've had some success on the scoreboard here in March. But it's they got to get back to it today. You know, if you play that way against Calgary, they're going to eat you up.
Chris, what are you seeing from Forsberg? I feel like he's still creating chances, creating offense. Obviously, he's not putting the puck in the back of the net. This happens to goal scorers, but anything different in his play that you've seen in this 8-game stretch?
No, I you know what? There's some stretches where with him I really like where I see he's engaged, he's going to the net, he's angry, he's got that you know, part of his personality where he can get fired up and you can see him that, you know, that he cares and he's you know, playing angry and with you know, with an edge. But I think he's getting chances. It's just like you said, Joe. Sometimes everything goes in for you and sometimes nothing goes through. I just think he has to keep playing through it. You know, and not force it. Like a lot of times, like I found last game when they got down a couple goals, they had to try to score all, you know, get four back at once. So you're trying to do too much individually instead of, you know, sticking to what they, how they have success. And I find he may be holding on to the puck a little too much sometimes. And I feel Dutchie's playing good too. I feel Duchesne's playing really good. He's getting a lot of looks, but it's just not in sync, you know. It's just not everybody at the same time. It just seems a little out of sorts. You know, that line will have some good stretches, and then, you know, they'll try to do too much and then make a play that's not there instead of just put the puck on net and go battle. These guys are going to net. You know, Forsberg, Duchesne, they're going to net. They're battling. They've committed to that this year, and they're stuck with it. But, you know, you don't get away from that. Don't get away from that. I just feel like they're just trying to, you know, maybe be something they're not as a team a little bit too much. And I don't know if it's a conscious decision or because they scored so many goals in March. But for whatever reason, it's really impacting the rest of their game.
Chris Mason on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road, brought to you by Coleman Tractor, Middle Tennessee's leading Kubota dealer. And C-Mace, obviously there's been a lot of talk the last couple of days with Predators fans about the decision to start UC Saros 2 games in a row for a back-to-back. Now, it's not the first time we've seen UC Saros do that. And I'm not really asking you about the coaching decision because we might see that happen again coming down the stretch for Saros. But as a goalie, How much of a challenge is that from your mind to start 2 days in a row? Obviously, we see players and skaters play two games back-to-back all the time, but why is it so much more difficult for a goalie in your mind?
Quite honestly, I don't really know. Like, I used to like it. I did it in my career, and I wasn't a starter my whole career. When I played for St. Louis, I ended up playing 34 games in a row. Bocun got hurt in Nashville. I think he played 22 straight, and I felt the more I played, the better I was. So I liked it, but I think, you know, long-term, and if you've got a goalie who's played as much as Juice, you know, you do have to monitor that because there's, you know, obviously playoff success. I think there's been a lot of documentation on guys that play past a certain amount, or if they play, have a big enough workload, don't have the success in playoffs, I guess. But I really honestly don't know what the big deal about it is. That's just me. And from a coaching standpoint, I think if you're sitting here and you got seven games left and the standings are what they are, you know, David Riddick's been good and he's done a good job in that role, but how do you not play your best player? You know, you live with the consequences. The guy stuck out the joint. They didn't help him out. They did the right thing. They got him out of there, you know, took him out of that situation. But, you know, personally, I'm doing that all day. You know, how do you, what if you lose that one and you start Riddick? You look back at that game and you go, well, we should have started Juice. You know, so I'm going with Juice all day in that game.
All right, Seamus, I gotta get you on Crispy and just the weekend that was with him. And thank you also for the help you've given me on something I'm working on him. But what did you think of all of it? I was very much enjoying the Pete and Crispy together action that we were getting. Some funny stuff. What was it like for you?
Well, it's just amazing. You know, when anytime you get to celebrate a man who is, you know, is incredible and that has touched so many lives and that has had such a big impact in my life and, you know, all of Smashville, like, it's just a blast. And it's kind of, you know, you do a lot of reflecting, I think, in nights like that, you know, where you look back, and especially with all the nostalgic pictures they had of, you know, when he was starting, and just, you just really, I guess, get a moment to, sometimes you don't always do this, but just to really, you know, focus on Terry Crisp and what he means and how important he is and how special of a guy he is and what he really means to this team and to this town. And, you know, his reach is really touched, I think, everybody that's been a Predators fan in a positive way. And I just have the utmost respect for the guy. I love the man, and, you know, I love Sheila. You don't think about Terry without thinking about Sheila. You don't think about Terry and Sheila without thinking about Pete and Claudia. You know, it's like a package deal, and that makes you even more happy. And it also makes me think how much I'm going to miss him. So it was fun. It was happy. It was sad. It was all the things. And, you know, it couldn't be. I was just happy to see him because he was happy too, and that made me even more happy.
Yep, very well said. Chris Mason, Preds TV analyst, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Joins us every Tuesday morning at 9:30. C-Mace, great stuff as always. Looking forward to the game tonight.
Okay, thank you guys. Great chatting with you.
Absolutely. Chris Mason, Preds TV analyst, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll take your thoughts on the Predators on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. We'll get into some big Vanderbilt news as well coming up next. Also, I've got some tickets to give away. Be caller number 3 at 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Caller number 3 will win a 4-pack of tickets to Seltzerland coming up on Saturday, April 30th at Riverside Golf Links. 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025 The Game. Join us tomorrow at 102.5 The Game at the Smokeville Smoke Shop at 699 West Main Street in Hendersonville from 2 to 5 p.m. for their 420 blowout event. Discount store-wide, you can have free dap bar, food and dessert trucks, and live music. Plus, we'll have your chance to win tickets to an upcoming Preds home game. That's tomorrow from 2 to 5 p.m. at Smokeville Smoke Shop in Hendersonville. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Little Guys Movers. Here's your chance to be your own boss. Join their team of 30-plus years of profits and good times. Visit littleguysfranchise.com. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks to Chris Mason for joining us in the last segment. And Joe, we've been waiting on a decision from Scottie Pippen Jr., and that has finally come from Scottie Pippen Jr. yesterday, announcing that he is declaring for the NBA draft and will be signing with an agent as well. So Scottie Pippen Jr. moving on in his basketball career and will be entering the NBA draft. I don't think a huge surprise, but there were some thoughts over the last couple weeks that maybe he comes back for another year, but not to be with Scottie Pippen Jr.
There goes my called shot for a couple weeks ago. Yeah. Yeah, it's not a huge surprise. I thought that maybe just the feedback, and you know, again, there's a process still to go through. I mean, he could have gone through the process again and then waited, but I mean, look, last year when he came back, he told me that, you know, that name, image, likeness, like if not for name, image, likeness, he would not have been back here. And he also told me, you know, look, he wants to be a professional basketball player, and it is challenging to, you know, to juggle being a college athlete with academics, and it's very rigorous at Vanderbilt. But I thought, well, maybe he's close to a degree now. Maybe, you know, get that. And honestly, he may be close enough that he can finish it, you know, super soon. I'm not sure about that. But it's not a huge surprise. You know, I think – I don't think that he's going to be a first-round pick. That would have been another reason to make the case, well, maybe go back. Now, I'm not saying he would have come back next year and made himself a first-round pick. I think he has limitations that are just – they're just reality for him. In terms of size and athleticism, he's a hell of a basketball player. And I think he's going to be in the NBA in some form at some point, probably going to have to spend a fair amount of time in the G League. I think he can be a backup point guard in the NBA. Again, he's been a tremendous player to watch at Vanderbilt. So that happens, and almost like instantaneously, Vanderbilt adds a pretty significant transfer, Ezrin Manjin, I hope I'm saying his last name right, from UC Davis. So he is in. He is transferring to Vanderbilt. This is a guy who averaged 15 points, 3.5 assists a game last year. Not a great shooter from outside, so that's one thing to keep in mind with him, but certainly a guy who can get to the rim, guy who can run a team. So they pick him up, and then they also pick up Paul Lewis, a former Maryland commit, number 81 in the top 100, which is good. Any top 100 players you can get, and that's a, you know, that's a good get. Adds to a, you know, one of the best Vanderbilt classes in a long time. So he's a point guard. Not, you know, he's slight, you know, like a lot of freshmen, you know, 6'2", 170 or so. So, but now you got, you know, you've just added to your backcourt, and I believe that means that they're all full on scholarship. Noah Shelby also coming in, also 6'2", right around that size, 175. Of course, teammate of Lee Dort, the big man, the jewel of the class coming in, along with Colin Smith as a 4-star kid, you know, ranked high in the nation. So, and I apologize on Paul Lewis. It's 81 by position, so he's in the 200s naturally. So it's not, you know, it's 3-star commit. He had Maryland, Georgetown offers. Altogether, you're going to have a hard time replacing what Pippen gave you, obviously. But you do have different options there. You got some depth. And if the perimeter group can figure it out and be good, you know, I think Vanderbilt with Dort and with Liam Robbins coming back, and Quentin Melora Brown, I think one of the best interior groups really in the SEC next year.
Yep, it's going to be fascinating to see. Number one, like where Pippen goes in the draft, I think it'll be in the second round somewhere. But, you know, does he spend a couple years in the G League? How long does it take him to get up to the NBA? That's going to be interesting to see. And then now, how does Vanderbilt, Jerry Stackhouse and company respond from here? Because obviously – that's a big hole with Scottie Pippen Jr. leaving the lineup. So this is a test for Stackhouse to get some guys in there that can try to replace the production that Scottie Pippen Jr. brought to the table.
Yeah, you know, 1 year with Pippen back with everything else, I think you're talking about a great chance to make the NCAA tournament. I still think that next year's roster could be an NCAA tournament roster. It's a big year for Stackhouse to try to get over the hump, get them in the NCAA tournament. Got to start well. You got a lot of new pieces, and that's the hard part sometimes is, you know, you figure things out in like January, but in the meantime, you drop three early in the season that end up really hurting you later. So they've got to be able to hit the ground running. It's going to be a fascinating team. Also on the Vanderbilt front today, just a little hint. Little birdie told me there's some really interesting news coming on the Vanderbilt overall sports front today. So watch out for that. Little hint for you. Little tease.
We will keep an eye on that throughout the rest of the day.
You do that.
Here today. Joe Rexroad, quickly, before we get out of here for the day, Preds and Flames tonight. Got some help last night from Vegas. What do you think the lineup looks like tonight? Do they go back with that big line? They're going to have morning skate here in a little while, so I guess we'll start to figure that out. But I'm interested to see, and after the drubbing that took place the other night against St. Louis, what the lineup looks like and what combos John Hines uses tonight against Calgary.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it makes sense that you get absolutely thrashed, you know, give up 8 goals, give up the all-time franchise record for 7 goals in a period, that there would be some kind of corresponding lineup reaction. But I don't know that I'm not totally convinced of that, just because, like, Hines' reaction to it was he actually liked how his team likes his team's game in the first period, and there were a lot of some bad decisions for sure. And it's just, I mean, it really, like, St. Louis just buried it every time, you know. Sometimes you have these stretches as a team, and then, like, you give up one or two of the goals. They gave up all of the goals.
Yes.
So I don't know, but I think that the idea of putting DeShane and Forsberg together has got to be appealing, has got to be discussed. And the idea, I'm more and more with DDC coming on here soon, I got to tell Darren, I'm more and more warming to what he has been saying for a long time. Like, Tanner, as you know, I get it, identity line, understand it, but maybe he's the answer. You've been looking for two of those top 6 spots all year have just not been filled adequately, and maybe he is the answer.
Well, we'll find out tonight. Preds taking on the Flames at 7 o'clock, pregame at 6 o'clock here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That's going to do it for us today here on Robbie and Rexroad. We'll be back 6 a.m. tomorrow. Darren Donica, Chase up next. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.